What's up, everybody? Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, available as always on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day, Louis DiBiase joining you on this Thursday edition of the show, as always, alongside my co-host Gino Camilleri. Gino, what's up, dude?
Not much, man. It's good talking to an Eagles fan again after discussing with Marcus Mosier yesterday, but it was a good chat, but I'm glad I'm talking to you again and we could get ready for this Sunday night matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. If you missed Gino's crossover edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast with Marcus Mosier, one of the hosts of the Locked On Cowboys podcast, you can check that out on our feed, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. That episode is up as well as all of our others. We are covering Dallas Week from yesterday up until Sunday night football when the Eagles take on the Dallas Cowboys at Lincoln Financial Field. And, Gino, this is going to be, you know, to me, it's funny how we're going to go through on today's show all the best and worst moments in Eagles history against the Dallas Cowboys, or at least the ones that we really can think of. And for me and you, since we're younger fans, we're going to think of probably some ones that have happened in more recent years. But we got some awesome feedback from you, the fans, you, the listeners out there, sending in your stuff, some great memories that you guys have with the Cowboys. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I don't know about you, Gino, but I think this is the first time in a long time where the NFC East, it's always been competitive. Even when the four teams outside of the division itself aren't very good, the division itself, normally the teams play each other really well. But even at 4-4, I don't fear, and we've been saying it all year, I don't fear Washington, definitely don't fear the Giants. We handled them pretty easily on Thursday Night Football. But Dallas, too, even last year and the year before when Dallas went 13-3, this is the first time in a while where I'm just like, the Eagles should destroy them, and it shouldn't even be close.
Honestly, I thought that way last year. I know people probably won't believe me, but I really did. I've known this identity of this Dallas team for so long. Like, you just watch them on paper. What have they changed in the past two seasons? I mean, Dak came on that one year, had a good year, but after that, since then, what have they changed? You can literally know exactly what they're going to do from play to play to play. You know their routes. You know their blocking schemes. You know their rushing schemes. It's such a black and white offense that they're not going to get anywhere, not in this day and age of the NFL. And Jerry Jones still thinks it's 1994, where you can just go out there with a decent quarterback, a good running back, and some good wide receivers. That's the thing. He still thinks that you can win like that, and he still thinks Dak Prescott is good, which is just an inclination that they have no idea that of how to evaluate talent in Dallas. Like, I know I'm bashing them right now, but everybody can see it besides them. They're just so colorblind to realize that they have to get with this day and age in the league, and you could see why the Eagles are so much better than them at this current point in time, and why I didn't doubt it last year, and why you and I don't doubt it this year, that they're going to come out on top because they have the better team. They have the more innovative offense. They have a true franchise quarterback who can go through offenses and get through his first read and let routes develop and not get scared by phantom pressure and march down the field and be clutch like we know he can be. So I'm really not worried.
Yeah, seriously, though, it's funny how crazy it's changed, too, in just a couple years, because you go back to 2016 when the Eagles drafted Wentz second overall and the Cowboys got Dak, and it was, what, the fourth round, right?
Yep.
So, and suddenly Dak Prescott sets the league on fire. Carson Wentz, most people, most Eagles fans, believed in Wentz, even though there were ups and downs in that rookie year, because he really didn't have anything to work with at receiver. He didn't have anything to work with at running back. But I almost, for the first time ever, really, was kind of jealous of Dallas that year, because here they had exactly what we were looking for in a quarterback, or at least we thought, where Prescott in his rookie year was, you know, almost in the MVP conversation of the league. And they had a running back that was extremely talented. And even with Dez Bryant struggling, he was still seen as a number one receiver back then. And he had an incredible offensive line. And I was thinking to myself, I remember back then, was, man, if Wentz had Ezekiel Elliott, if you switch the two. And it was a legitimate argument back then, Dak versus Wentz. But it's clear that Carson Wentz is light years ahead of Dak Prescott, and more so, Prescott can be good when he has an elite offensive line like he did back then, and when he has Ezekiel Elliott playing like one of the best running backs in football, which he really hasn't this year, and when he has weapons, Dak can be good. But Carson Wentz, you see what he's doing now with exactly what Dak had in 2016 with weapons. I mean, our fifth option right now, Geno, is Dallas Goedert, which is incredible to think that someone of that talent. And you think when Mike Wallace comes back eventually, he's expected to be out of his walking boots soon. I mean, that's six guys that Carson Wentz has to his disposal, and he is actually an elite quarterback with those weapons, whereas Dak with those guys, he's just a good quarterback. He's fine, and I think he's always going to be average, maybe even below average. I mean, you look at his numbers the past year and a half, they are extremely underwhelming. So, yeah, I'm extremely confident heading to this game. To me, truthfully, man, if you just look at their schedule, the next five games, I won't accept anything lower than 8-5. They need to, maybe one loss, and it could be against New Orleans in a week on the road. I would understand losing that game, but there is no way this team, the talent it has compared to the other NFC's teams, who were, you know, outside of the Saints game in 2 weeks, those are the teams you're playing this month, is the NFC's teams. You're playing the Giants again, Washington, and Dallas. I want 8-5, and maybe 9-4, and I'm not accepting anything less, because the Eagles they should roll through this division, these divisional opponents.
You'd absolutely think so at this point in the season. I mean, there was a lot of talk about Washington, but you lose four offensive linemen, and you're signing guys off the street to protect Alex Smith of all people, and have Adrian Peterson rush behind that offensive line that's banged up. That's not sustainable, and everybody knew it wasn't sustainable, and they were one of those teams, if not the one team in the NFC that could not take on those injuries, because they didn't have the depth. They had solid talent up top, but once you lose your left tackle, your center, your right guard, and your right tackle, you're not going to do much after that. I mean, your defense can only take you so far, and Alex Smith can only take you so far. They were really dependent on that O-line, so when you play them in a couple weeks, it should be easy. We're not even going to talk about the Giants, because we already know how that's going to go. But Dallas right now, they're a team that's on their heels. They know that this is the season. Ezekiel Elliott even said it today. So, do I think the Eagles are going to come out on top? Yes, but you can't look past this team. You can't look to that Saints matchup. You have to focus on this week. And I think the addition of Golden Tate really is going to make them focus on this week, because they're going to want to get him into the offense, get him schemed up so he can start to develop a rapport with Carson Wentz going into the tougher stretch of the schedule. So if you think the Eagles are going to come out there and have a look-ahead game to the Saints, man, you're wrong. I think this team is really going to bunker down on Sunday. Oh, yeah. Like, Lane Johnson's playing on half a leg. This team is going to rally around guys like that. Like, they know this is the time. You're playing through injuries. You're playing through everything. These boys are going to come out and battle on Sunday, and they're wearing black. Dallas is coming to their own funeral. Like, it's set in stone at this point.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could see looking past a team, like if Tennessee was at this time of the year and they played New Orleans the next week, but you never look past a divisional opponent, especially not Dallas. Eagles players know what this rivalry means to the fans and to the players, too. You're hearing Jason Kelce call out the organization. Jason Peters is talking about how Dallas is arrogant and how the Eagles don't like Dallas and Zach Ertz. So the players know as well what this rivalry means, not only to the fan base, but to them as well. The players, they embrace it, and there's no way they're looking past this game, especially on primetime football. I'm not concerned about that at all. Gino, what we might have to be concerned about is the return game. Darren Sproles re-aggravated his hamstring injury, which is just really tough because he was cleared to practice this week. He might be getting another run after the catch type guy on this offense, and you know, add him to the return game where they just waived DeAndre Carter, who was picked up by Houston, so they don't have DeAndre Carter to bring back in the return game. This was a really tough move, and the Eagles are kind of getting some criticism for bringing in some of the older veterans like Jason Peters and paying Nick Foles and Darren Sproles. And while I understand the logic behind Jason Peters and Nick Foles coming back, I wanted LeGarrette Blount over I didn't want either. I wanted them to add someone in the draft. But if I had to choose right now, I mean, giving LeGarrette Blount an extra $1 million seemed like the better move right now, as Darren Sproles just can't get on the field.
Yeah, I think we have to address this in two different facets here. So first is the management of Darren Sproles being on the roster. Like you said, this team they're on the younger side of the NFL right now. I know you have your older veteran guys like Jason Peters and Darren Sproles, But they still have had that equal balance of youth and veterans that they had last year. So bring back that veteran guy. But how many running backs last till they're 35 years old?
Right.
You can't rely on him to be a big part of your offense. So for Doug to go into the season putting a large majority of the burden on Darren Sproles, dare I say,
he did, yeah. Was they poor relied on him way too much week one.
Yeah, exactly. That was poor on his behalf. You know that guy cannot play that role. You have to give him limited snaps, maybe 10 snaps, 12 snaps the first week, and just work him into a niche role, which you know he can do. Get him out there for some screens, but you can't feature him. So that was the first facet. But the whole thing with DeAndre Carter and him, I think it's so ridiculous to be upset about this because
it's Paul Turner 2.0. I mean,
yeah, it literally is. I mean, DeAndre Carter came here and did his job, but
yeah,
look at
good.
It like this. Yeah, yeah, he was solid. He did well for, I mean, we showed that Tennessee game with the return he gave us late, but nothing we could do about that now. But look at it. You thought Darren Sproles was going to come back. You have Jordan Matthews. You have Golden Tate. You have Nelson Aguilar. You have Alshon Jeffrey. Where is DeAndre Carter on this team outside of being a returner? You need depth at defensive tackle where you're already light. Tim Jernigan isn't ready to come back. And in 2 weeks, you could have a healthy Mike Wallace. In 2 weeks from now, DeAndre Carter is gone one way or another. If Tim Jernigan plays next week, he might have been waived next week for all we know.
Yeah, that's so. Yeah.
Yeah, so to rely on Darren Sproles and be upset about this is quite ridiculous because how did they ever entertain the idea that Sproles would get hurt again and the guy who would be their soon-to-be eighth or ninth weapon on the team would just be in a different city? Like, that's something that teams you won't account for, if I'm making that clear.
No, absolutely. And I think, I mean, when Mac Hollins comes back with Mike Wallace, it just – it wasn't really, to me, a big deal that DeAndre Carter isn't on the team anymore. And, you know, you look at the return game now, some options. I still think with Golden Tate here and Nelson Aguilar, Corey Clement, Wendell Smallwood, I'm not really overly concerned that the Eagles can't find a returner. I think it's just another overblown thing. It does remind me of the Paul Turner situation where people were all in on Paul Turner making the roster, and it just seemed like a heartbreak that he wasn't on the team. Or like Henry Josie, I don't know, he was a guy that made an impact, but he just, you know, he didn't make a big enough impact for me to stir up a fuss.
Yeah, agreed. Like I said, but in 2 weeks from now, he could be the eighth or ninth weapon, and he'd be a healthy scratch. So
right. You
can't be too upset about it, and there's plenty of other options. You just have to try something different. I mean, people were talking about Golden Tate. Oh, you bring him into this offense, and now he's got to worry about learning how to return punts. First off, he had 2 weeks to learn this offense. He's a very intelligent guy who can bunker down and learn the offense, an offense that he's used to playing, and they would not have acquired his skill set if they didn't think he could work in this offense or learn the verbiage behind all the plays. And two, he's a guy that can take on a burden of being a punt returner. You don't think he wants to come here and be an instant element in every facet of the game to, if he goes to free agency, increase his market value? If he can go out there and average, what, 20 yards a return on a punt, do you not think that's going to add maybe a million or two to his contract?
Right.
So why would he not want to shoulder that burden? Or Nelson Aguilar, who knows he hasn't been getting super involved in the game plan, go out there and let him take some punt and kick return reps. He did it at USC when he was there, so why not? I think
or even Shelton Gibson, someone
or even Shelton
never
Gibson, somebody
field.
That's on the team. Yes, exactly. This is such a minute thing to worry about. Yes, it does hurt that you're losing a guy who was pretty consistent over the last couple weeks, but they can make up for it. They just have to worry about this offense. Special teams is the third out of the positional units that I'm worrying about at this current point in time.
Absolutely, Gino. I think that's a great point, a good way to wrap up segment one here on this Thursday edition of Locked On Eagles, brought to you by Blue Chew. Guys, you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special code, that's CODE, just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code CODE, CODE, to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast today. All right, everybody, welcome back to Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri on this Thursday edition of the show, and it's Dallas Week, Gino, and what better way to celebrate Dallas Week than to take a little trip down memory lane and kind of reminisce on some of the best and worst moments in Eagles-Cowboys history. This is one of the biggest rivalries, not only in the NFL, but in sports. I mean, rivalries, to me, I think sometimes they're a little bit overblown, but when you think of rivalries in sports, I feel like Eagles-Cowboys is one of the top ones that you get to pretty quickly on the list.
I agree. People were talking about it today, saying, is this an overblown rivalry? Which I think is completely ludicrous, because everybody knows that this rivalry is probably one of the top three in the NFL. I mean, you and I live in Buffalo, and even Bills fans know that, and they pay no attention to the NFC East, you know? So people realize that these two teams do not like each other. You look at teams maybe like the Steelers and the Bengals right now. Eagles-Cowboys over the last couple years hasn't been competitive, but, I mean, what, from the early 2000s to the mid-2010s, they always split games or were swept like in 09, and they were always competitive. And I still think this game on Sunday is going to be competitive in one way or another. And there is still hate there. You heard the players talking out about it today, and not just guys like a Shelton Gibson or like a special teamers guy, guys like Jason Peters and Jason Kelsey and all big names know that this rivalry means much more than just putting on a different color football jersey. There is hate between these two organizations.
No, I'm with you 100%. And like I'm bigger into the other rivalries too in the division. I really don't like Washington. They're always a pain in the side of the Eagles, especially when those years when they had DeSean Jackson drove me nuts. And they've had some crazy moments with the Giants as well in their history. But again, you can just tell with just go on Twitter and look at just this week and how Eagles fans are reacting. They just have a bigger chip on their shoulder than normal when they're going up against the Cowboys. Because no matter how successful the Eagles are, it always seems like it's kind of royalty against like the common folk. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Just like the Eagles, I feel like, I feel like they're the underdog because people have hyped up Dallas since the dawn of time, and really they haven't deserved it for the past, what, 30 years, really? Mm-hmm. So, but they still are labeled as America's team. They're still getting primetime games. I mean, the Eagles are the prime, you know, attractive ticket here on Sunday Night Football. But Dallas, again, they played last week on Monday Night Football against Tennessee, and that's really more driven based on Dallas playing in that game than Tennessee as to why that was a primetime game. So despite them being a boring offense with a bad quarterback, with a bad offensive system, with a crazy GM/owner that just gave up a first-round pick for a receiver, despite all that, they're still getting the hype that just they don't deserve. So I feel like with Eagles fans, they always see that in their – I think it drives them crazy. I know it drives me crazy. And to me, they've been very, very close throughout. Really, I mean, in the 90s, the Cowboys dominated. They won three Super Bowls in that era. That was a dynasty with Troy Aikman, Michael Irvin, and Emmitt Smith. But in the 2000s, I feel like they've been fairly close. I think the Eagles, you know, they really dominated in that early 2000s era. But for the most part, these teams have been pretty close. And you think about the 44-6 game is a popular one to think back, but what are some of your favorite memories growing up, Eagles, Cowboys, some marquee games? Because they have played in very significant games, because again, these teams have been pretty close throughout the 21st century.
Yeah, now that you put it like that, this just reminds me a lot of the Yankees and Red Sox rivalry. Like, I'm a Yankee fan myself, so this year hurt, but if you look at these two in perspective, Dallas, much like the Yankees, dominated the 90s. Then when you get to the 2000s, they kind of start to even out. And now that you get into the modern day, the Red Sox are almost starting to break away at a faster pace because
like
they're more
are.
just like the Eagles, they're more into analytics. They're breaking away from just like the common trends of the of their respective leagues. And I think this rivalry really hits home in that regard, because you can remember so many great games between these two. I know the first one I automatically think of is 44-6. I think every Eagles fan just thinks of that 44-6 game. So much had to go right for them. It was just such a Philadelphia story. And that was the first time that I thought things were going right for the Eagles. I know they went on to those four straight NFC championship games and through the early 2000s, but we suffered defeat there, and then this time we actually thought it was going to happen. Everything had to go right. The Bears had to lose to the Texans, who were a middling team. They ended up winning that game. The Raiders, who were a subpar team that year, I think they finished 5-11, had to go on and beat, who was it, the Bucks. And then we had to get it flexed to Sunday Night Football. We had to play our bitter rivals, and we beat them 44-6, go on to the NFC Championship game. That's just one that just is so special to me. It was Brian Dawkins' last go around. It was perfect.
Yeah, it just seemed like anything that happened that season, really from that run, from the start, beating Dallas in that game and then making that run in the playoffs, you're right, it just seemed like with the Eagles, it was like they were just like meant to keep going that season. So that's the popular one. And in our third segment of the show, we're going to get into some of the fans and what they had to say of their favorite moments in Eagles-Cowboys rivalry history. An underrated one for me, Gino, because it didn't have a lot of significance looking back at it, but the 2014 Thanksgiving game is kind of a dark horse for me. When Mark Sanchez is starting for the Eagles after Nick Foles gets hurt, and on Thanksgiving Day, Mark Sanchez comes into Dallas, and McCoy, this was a big day for LeSean McCoy as well, and that offensive line was tearing Dallas apart. But Mark Sanchez comes in and just shreds the Cowboys on national TV. That one, again, the Eagles went 10-6 and they missed the playoffs, and it kind of started the chaotic Chip Kelly year in 2015. But that was really fun just because of who it was at quarterback and the performance he had against the Cowboys on the biggest... I mean, everyone watches football on Thanksgiving, and the fact that Mark Sanchez spanked the Cowboys in that game was pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, you always love seeing it when they play those primetime games, especially on Thanksgiving, because everybody ate their turkey. They were ready. I think that was that the early game or the 4 o'clock
game? It was the 4 o'clock game, because of course the Lions always get their noon game.
Yep, everybody ate their early dinner, got down, and saw that butt kicking that Mark Sanchez delivered to the Cowboys. That was a great game. That team, I liked that 14 team a lot, and I just despise them just because I went and saw them play against Tampa and get absolutely smoked. Yeah. So I like to not think about that season at all, because I drove 6 hours to leave the game in the third quarter when Mark Sanchez got absolutely.
They started off 5-1 that year too. I mean, they were real. I mean, and like they weren't dominating teams in the first half. Remember, they were scoring special teams touchdowns off the wazoo. It was a weird year, and of course, led by Mark Sanchez in the second half, pretty much sums it all up.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I just don't have a good track record of seeing Eagles backup quarterbacks. Mark Sanchez, and then I saw McNabb tears ACL that year, and I had to see Jeff Garcia go in the game. So I'm good on those games.
Yeah, that's a tough track record. So some other ones that I can think of. Last year, I really liked that Sunday night game just because... So 2016 was one of the tougher ones to swallow when it was Sunday Night Football. And, man, these teams play on Sunday Night Football a lot. I've just realized that.
They play every year on Sunday Night Football.
And again, because it is one of the more popular rivalries in sports. I remember last year was great because they destroyed them, and the Eagles were the best team in the NFL throughout the majority of the season. And it's funny because the year before, it was the opposite. It was Dallas is on this really high level, and the Eagles were thinking, oh, can the Eagles get up to Dak Prescott on the Cowboys level? And that's why 2016 was so hard to swallow, because that tough, close finish at the end and overtime where Prescott hits Witten and that terrible
play call.
Who pushed
off. It was pass interference.
It was clearly
pass interference.
but remember the terrible play call to Darren Sproles to get them out of field goal range? And then
Wendell Smallwood fumbled the ball. Yeah.
It was
really
tough.
I
remember Fletcher Cox in the post game was like, we had that game, and that could have put us in position to control the NFC East, because you win that game. It was after the Minnesota game where you destroyed Sam Bradford, and you were right with Dallas neck and neck in the East, and then after that game, the Eagles really just started to tailor off down the stretch. But then last year, they come back, and they were the pretty much the best team in the NFC and in the NFL. It was just awesome how quickly the tides turned in one season.
Yeah, that 16 game really drove me nuts. But you have to look back the year before that with the Jordan Matthews walk-off game. That was one I don't think I'll ever forget.
One of the only bright spots of that season.
Yeah, that was excellent. Jordan Matthews, I remember the route perfectly, just ran it right up the seam, just for one time in his career, had sure hands, caught it, ran right into the end zone. That was great. There's just so many good games with it's not like the Giants where you have like the miracle in the Meadowlands and these named games,
yeah,
but
right.
There's just been so many battles and one-sided victories, and I mean, there's been some bad years. Look at 09. We got swept.
Yeah,
three
I
games
was gonna
to
just bring that up.
Rivals.
2009 was a really tough one to swallow because in week 17 they get beat down in Dallas to lose the NFC East. The Eagles are the wild card team at 11-5, mind you. And then the next 2009 really isn't talked about a lot because I mean they were really good in the regular season, but they got outed so quickly in the playoffs because then the next week they got destroyed again. I remember the only touchdown the Eagles scored. I don't know if you remember this. Can you guess what the touchdown was in that playoff game?
Well, that playoff game, funny enough, I was a Nighthawks lacrosse season ticket holder. Indoor lacrosse for people who don't know what it is. But I was a big-time fan. We're playing the Buffalo Bandits, so I couldn't miss it. It was the first round of the playoffs, so I recorded the game, and I found out the score when I walked in the door to my house because the game was ending. Nope.
So
I never watched that game, and I will not go back and watch that game.
So the touchdown, and remember in 2009, it was McNabb's last year starting.
Yep.
But Kevin Cobb was the backup, and they had just brought in Michael Vick, fresh out of jail, to be the third string he was the Lamar Jackson. You know what Baltimore is doing now with Lamar, or what the 49ers did with Kaepernick before they benched Alex Smith, and they put those guys in for different packages. The Eagles did that with Michael Vick a lot that year. And Vick came in for a play in that playoff game and hit Jeremy Maclin for a big, I think it was like a 50-plus yard touchdown.
Yes,
so Michael Vick,
that.
The third string, comes in. He threw the touchdown to tie up the game to Jeremy Maclin, and then the Cowboys just went on a run right after that. So it's funny. I mean, that'd be good Eagles trivia because I don't know if a lot of people really remember that, not only that game and that touchdown, but just the season in general. I don't know if it was because people were so upset about Dawkins leaving to Denver that year, but at 11-5, they looked really good in McNabb's final season. He finally had weapons, and then they just get hosed by Dallas twice and end up getting him traded to Washington, which then we all know how that ended for McNabb.
Yeah, it was quite the bitter end of his legacy, unfortunately. I thought that 08 team really had the talent to do it. I mean, we played Pittsburgh earlier that year.
Yeah, and I think that's
Can you guess how many times sacked Ben Roethlisberger?
Was it 12?
No, it was 7.
No, I'm sorry.
But
I'm
still,
thinking,
still
yeah,
impressive.
Yeah, 12's a lot.
Yeah. But
I'm thinking
of
the Giants game where didn't they sack McNabb 12 times?
Oh, yeah. Was that Winston Justice's worst game, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Winston Justice, bringing back some names. But I think that's, too, you mentioned 2008 and how they remember they stomped Pittsburgh, and people really thought that was like the last chance for that era of the Eagles to try to get the ring. And they didn't do it. And Dawkins leaving kind of symbolized the end. And I think that's why in 2009, despite the Eagles being a really good football team, especially on the offensive side of the football, people just, I don't know, I don't think they really gravitated towards that team. They didn't really embrace that team because I feel like they thought it was kind of the end of an era. You're bringing in a rookie running back in McCoy, a rookie receiver in Maclin, second year DeSean Jackson. Your defense was being overhauled. It kind of just seemed like a reboot for the Eagles, and then they traded away McNabb. So, I don't know, 2009 is kind of this weird season that kind of gets lost in Eagles history.
Yeah, we thought for about 6 months that Kevin Cobb was actually going to be a franchise quarterback.
Yeah,
that
I
was
bought his jersey,
fun
man.
Times. Those Kelly Greens, they had to waste
season.
Them on him. A lot of people have that jersey, unfortunately.
Well,
but
I mean, it only lasted, what, a quarter and a half? I mean, he got hurt in the second quarter, and then Michael Vick takes over. But a name that you might not have thought of in a while that I will bring up from those Eagles seasons, Leonard Weaver.
I can tell you right now, I do not remember that name.
You don't remember Leonard Weaver, the fullback?
No, I do not.
He was awesome, and I remember this. He was good against Dallas.
I knew Reno Mahe. I was a big Reno Mahe guy.
So look up, you got to look up Leonard Weaver. He was the best fullback I've ever watched, and that's not saying a whole lot, but he was basically a running back at fullback, and he, in 2009, made some huge plays running the football. I remember, too, his big run against the Giants that year for a touchdown, and then in week one against the Packers that year, 2010, he also got hurt before Cobb did, a career-ending injury where he got pushed forward and his leg bent forward, and it snapped, and he was out for the rest of his career. So it's probably why you don't remember him. He only played on the Eagles for 2009 in that one quarter in 2010. But I'm just saying, look up Leonard Weaver. If Eagles fans out there don't know who Leonard Weaver is, he is an... Gino, trust me, right after the show, do it. He was... It's fun bringing up all these memories from 2009 and, like, the kind of that time frame against the Eagles and Cowboys, because there's some players I just haven't thought of in a while. And one I thought of too in 2008, how about before 44-6, when DeSean Jackson threw the football outside of the end zone before he got in, where he dropped it and he didn't carry it into the end zone and the Eagles didn't score. I feel like that's a pretty bad one.
Yeah, that's one play that lives in infamy of DeSean Jackson. He was a hothead. He was the guy that got that rivalry really going. And that was kind of funny that that's like the big memory people have from 08, because his big play to like cap it all off that year was against the Cardinals in that NFC Championship game, yeah, where he bobbled it and like made one of the most unbelievable catches to get into the end zone. And you could look back earlier that year and he just threw the ball out before he got into the end zone. It's just kind of funny how things come full circle like that. But I just got to ask you a quick trivia question.
Okay, all right.
We'll stop with the nostalgia outside of the Cowboys, but
yes.
What was the final play of Donovan McNabb in 2008 as a Philadelphia Eagle? Do you remember who the pass was to?
Was it to Kevin Curtis?
You are correct.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Dear God. McNabb has had some pretty bad players
fourth
to throw to.
Nine, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Right through his hands. Yep. All right, enough with the nostalgia. I apologize.
But in 2000... It's funny with DeSean in Dallas, because he's got that very memorable moment where he drops the football before he gets to the end zone. But he's also got a signature play that motivated Nelson Agholor to do something last year against the Cardinals when he scored, and it was the fall back in the end zone.
Yep.
On Sunday Night Football 2010, right after, it was the game right after Miracle in the New Meadowlands, to kind of set up the Eagles winning the NFC East that year. DeSean with the fallback, that motivated Agholor last year to do the same thing against Arizona, and Agholor even gave DeSean credit after the game, saying he was the one that motivated him to do that. So DeSean Jackson was really always stepped up against the Cowboys, and there's just been some really awesome moments against Dallas. Some other bad ones I can think of off the top of my head is that Week 2 game against Dallas at the Link in 2015, where DeMarco Murray was back against the Cowboys.
Dude, that was one of the worst games I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that was tough to swallow. I remember Byron Maxwell...
Lane Johnson had to play left tackle because Jason Peters went out week one. Yep.
And Byron Maxwell punched out a ball. Malcolm Jenkins took it to the house, and I think it was one of their... I think it might have been the only touchdown they had that game. And
I think it was
Sleeves
20 to 10.
Was out there. That was a terrible game to watch, because then they were at 0-2, and there were so many expectations for the Eagles that year. I remember Adam Schefter, I don't know if you remember, Adam Schefter picked the Eagles to win the Super Bowl that year, and he picked Sam Bradford to win Super Bowl MVP. So they had some big expectations, especially after that Green Bay Week 3 game, and then Dallas comes in and just destroys them. But a good part of that one, didn't Jordan Hicks break Tony Romo's collarbone in that game?
He did. I remember that one vividly.
That was like Jordan Hicks' first big, like, this guy's a player moment. Because then he started really getting it going with D'Amico Ryans that year, and he took out Tony Romo in that game.
Yeah, he's had a couple big plays against Cowboys. He took out Romo, made everybody in the NFC East happy, made everybody in the NFC happy, made just about everybody in the NFL happy. And nobody's going to believe me, but I called that before it was going to happen. I called it the night before, and I said, I guarantee Tony Romo breaks a bone tomorrow. Don't like to wish injury upon everybody, but I just had a niche feeling that his shoulder that has been so badly beaten throughout the years was just going to take another little chip on his way out the door one more time against the Eagles. But, yeah, that was a brutal game. You have to look back to – we're forgetting one of the great Sunday night games against them, and that's the Sunday night game to clinch the playoffs in, what, 2013? Brandon Boykin's interception?
Oh, yeah, how can we forget that one? The McCoy's
that was one of the great
game.
It just wasn't memorable because of Kyle Orton. Like, they
yeah,
weren't playing Tony Romo. They were playing Kyle Orton. It was kind of, if they lost that game, it was their own fault type deal. But it was still exciting. I remember being at one of my friends' house. It was a It was a work night for his parents, and me and my other buddy, who were an Eagles fan, were just pumping our fists, trying not to wake them up. It was a great game.
You know what's a funny moment I remember of that one was actually on the other side when DeMarco Murray blew up Damian Square.
Oh, yes. He absolutely
when he got hit, when he sent him to the sun?
Sent him into the moon, into the stratosphere.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
these are some great moments.
Yes, I hope everybody's enjoying this as much as we are, because we could talk about this nostalgia stuff all day.
I'm a sucker for Eagles nostalgia.
We're going to get back to the right now for 1 second.
Yeah.
And I want everybody to look back to that play with DeSean Jackson when he flopped into the end zone and showed up all of Jerry World and told him what the Eagles were about. That play that he ran, do you remember what play it was?
Wasn't it a throw to the sideline?
It was a throw to the sideline
and
about a 3 yard out.
Field and he takes that to the house. I think it was like, what, 91 yards?
Yep. And you know who is now in this offense that can do that exact same thing?
When you were describing that, I was thinking of Golden Tate.
Golden Tate. And I am so amped up to see how they utilize him against this Dallas team.
Yeah, same.
That this Sunday could arguably go down to be one of the more memorable Eagles-Cowboys games in our favor if it goes the right way, if they game plan to get Golden Tate involved like he was when he played against them in Detroit. And I'm so excited. I'm so amped up. It's 9:54 right now. I don't know how I'm going to go to bed the next two nights. I'm like a kid on Christmas, ready for this matchup. It's do or die. They got to win this game, take control of the division, and just march towards the playoffs. This is the time to do it right now, and I hope Golden Tate is our golden ticket to the playoffs.
Absolutely. Love it. Let's take one more break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. We'll wrap it up with some fan reactions. We'll get your guys' thoughts on the Eagles-Dallas rivalry, some of your favorite moments. That's coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the final segment of this Thursday edition of Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you, taking a trip down memory lane, loving the Eagles nostalgia in that second segment. Me and Gino talking about some key moments in Eagles Cowboys history, the good and the bad on the Eagles side of it. And I had you guys contribute on Facebook. Thanks to everyone that contributed to this conversation, bringing in some of your favorite memories against the Cowboys. And Gino, a couple interesting ones I saw. Some older fans I liked the opinion. I liked some of the stories that they had, ones that I didn't really think of that didn't come to my head immediately since, you know, we're younger Eagle fans. And Jim says, Buddy Ryan throwing for a touchdown when Dallas thought they were going to take a knee. That's a pretty fun one.
Yeah. There's so many. It's just so tough to remember, like, where you were at these point in time. And I like to just try and think back. And just ring them off. Like, I want to hear what these people have to say, because they're going to remember ones that we don't.
Mike Paley, Wilbert Montgomery's touchdown run in the 1980 NFC Championship game. I feel like that's a good one, too. A memorable one where the Eagles finally – Dallas was really good in the 70s, and they were just – they were seen – that's when they really became America's team, and the Eagles get to the championship that year for being bad for so long. I definitely like that one from Mike.
Yeah, it's always one you see on those flashback films that they put on the big boards before the game. That's a great one.
Here's an interesting one from Ryan. T.O.'s return to the link in 2005.
That was bad blood between them, and that's something that Eagles fans are really split on. And I wish that team was able to stay together, and it stunk that he had to go to Dallas out of all teams, but they didn't have too much success, so it wasn't the worst thing in the world.
That one was from Ryan Messenger. Thanks, Ryan, for that one. A couple people, including Jamison Snyder, talking about the 44-6 game, how he was actually at the game. So I'm sure that had to be a memorable one. Because, again, like you said, 2008, it had that magic. It was that last do-or-die season for that era of Eagles football. So 44-6, Alan McNabb also saying 44-6. We got one, I don't know what game it was, but Liam McDonald says Leo Shepard's 100-yard interception return touchdown.
Oh, yeah, shuffle. I remember that play.
Yeah.
I don't remember it vividly, but that's what made me the biggest shuffle fan in the world after I saw that.
Someone, Ben Saunders, chimes in the 2000 Week 1 season opener. Interesting. That's
before I was a fan. I was a fan in 2001. I apologize.
I was 3 years old, so some of these are dating me. But I do know my Eagles history. But it's good to see other people appreciating memories that, like, again, I don't know if many people really remembered that 2009 playoff game, Michael Vick scoring a touchdown to Jeremy Maclin. So it's cool to see some other people bringing up some other moments. And then Jordan Matthews' walk-off touchdown was a big one. Sean Cards writes in Jordan Matthews' walk-off touchdown. Stephen Howarth, the Eagles-Cowboys Thanksgiving game in 2014. So someone else does appreciate Mark Sanchez.
Hey, appreciate Mark Sanchez. Dallas. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, so those are some of the memories they gave us here on the podcast today. So thanks to everyone that contributed to the show today, talking about their favorite memories in Eagles-Cowboys history. Gino, that's going to wrap up today's show. Thanks for joining me once again today. Dallas Week continues. We'll be back tomorrow to get deeper into the game itself. But for today, I thought it was great to take a trip down memory lane. I'm a sucker for Eagles nostalgia, and I hope all the listeners out there enjoyed it.
Yeah, I hope they did too. I mean, I could go on about this stuff forever. I know so many irrelevant dates and games I could talk for hours.
We're bringing up the names Winston Justice, Kevin Curtis. I mean,
oh, if we want to get into some good names like Victor Abiyamiri, or go back to the early 2000s with Sean Considine and all those guys, we could go down that trip, and that's for another day over the summer when we don't have as much football to talk about. We'll get there eventually, but I hope everybody else enjoyed it. Everybody should be ready for Dallas Week. Your blood pressure should be up. You should be getting on your Eagles green, because Sunday, get ready to rock, folks, because this is when the Eagles make their hay. This is when Carson Wentz starts his march towards the MVP race. This is where the offense starts clicking. This is where the defense starts to bunker down. This is where the NFC starts to take shape, and we really figure out if we are going to compete for a championship, which I think this team, this organization, this coaching staff, the owner, the general manager, everybody knows they have the ability to do so. So Sunday, they got to come out and just prove it to who they are. They know who they are. They're dogs, and they're going to come out there and fight.
Absolutely, Gino. That's going to do it for today's show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow, and let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.